Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. There is really practically no one whose intelligence I admire more and whose ability to help the rest of us as a result of it understand what on earth is going on, particularly with respect to the nexus between national security and the law, than our first guest. He is Andy McCarthy, a former federal prosecutor. These days, he is a columnist with National Review Online and with PJ Media. When he's not doing that tirelessly, he is cranking out best-selling books, including The Grand Jihad, How Islam and the Left Sabotage America. Andy McCarthy, welcome back. It's so good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Frank, great to be with you.
You had a terrific piece today, I believe at National Review, about the Iran decision, now awaiting the president's final determination. It involves certifying whether the Iranians are in compliance or not. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts as to how President Trump should come down on that decision and where we go from here.
Well, Frank, I think he should come down where he should have come down in the first place. This is his third 90-day review, which is what the governing statute requires. Every 90 days, the president has to certify the deal. And what that entails really is two findings. One, that Iran is in compliance, as you mentioned. And the other is that the deal is in the vital national security interests of the United States. I really don't see how conceivably either of these two findings could ever have been made. Iran has never been in compliance, and the UN's International Atomic Energy Agency, which is responsible for what passes for monitoring this deal.
The most intrusive inspection regime of all time, as I recall.
Exactly, except that they can't inspect in the places where, if there is nuclear work going on, where it's happening, namely the military sites. So Iran's never been in compliance. It's never been possible to say they're in compliance. And the deal obviously isn't in American national interest when you're basically funding America's enemies in order to conduct anti-American activities.
Yeah. And Andy, I mean, the amazing thing is that he not only certified to each of those points, he certified to both of them twice. I gather he wasn't very happy about having to do it. I'm told that the president's options may still be limited to the point that he will not be given one that says, let's walk away from the whole thing, which is what you've recommended. John Bolton, who we'll be talking with shortly, Fred Flights, I and others have all said is really the way to go here. Why is that? And what are the consequences of buying into what I think is kind of a bait and switch here, that you certify they're not in compliance, but you nonetheless stay in the treaty, which I guess means effectively that you're saying it is in our national interest?
Frank, it's strange that, you know, the day I was in school for constitutional law, they actually taught you that the president ran the State Department and the National Security Council, not the other way around. So when I hear, you know, people say the president hasn't been given X number of options, you know, the president was unhappy about having to make a certification that he found unsavory, I can only shake my head. He is the president. But whatever options they give him, which are unsatisfactory that he's not happy with, maybe the answer to that is to get new advisors, because he's still the president. It's not the National Security Council or the State Department ultimately that's making these certifications. It's the president. So he should do what he thinks is right. And the only right thing to do here is to walk away. You know, the geniuses at Foggy Bottom have decided that the way to fix this is to say it's not in our interest, yet preserve it and stay in it. But that supposedly is going to give us the position that we need in order to improve it. You can't improve this thing because, as it's written, even if Iran didn't cheat, We don't prevent them from getting a nuke. We delay them a little bit. So why you would want to preserve an arrangement like that is beyond me.
And in a way, the bigger problem, Andy, is that in the process, you're still legitimating this regime, which is fundamentally, I think, the conceit of this whole enterprise, that you can do deals with them.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Frank. And in fact, it's not only theoretically true what you've just said, also by the terms of the deal, as long as we're in it, we're obliged to help them and to be supportive of them. So I say Trump should do what he talked about in the Art of the Deal before he was a politician, which is if you want to get a good deal, you have to know when to push away from the table. And this is the time to do that. So if he wants to make a deal, we do have leverage points and we should be squeezing this regime, not resuscitating it.
Andy, let me switch gears on this other matter that is very much on our mind, of course. You, having spent time in the business of law enforcement and prosecuting criminals, I know you've got personal firsthand insights into this, but I'm puzzled, I must say, that in the instance of this attack in Las Vegas, most recently, but now really serially, just about always, in fact, we're told immediately after the incident by the relevant authorities, either local or federal or both, that we don't know the motivations, but we know it's not terrorism. Now, would you just walk me through how it can be both of those things?
You know, look, we don't know. It seems so odd, Frank, to be in a situation where we actually don't know the motive. You know, usually, I don't mean to laugh, it's an ironic laugh at the way things have been covered for these years, But, you know, when they tell us in the past, especially if it's in the context of jihadist terror, that we don't know the motive and we may never know the motive, that always signals to me that we know exactly what the motive is. And in this instance, we're actually dealing with a situation which very, very strangely, you mentioned, you know, my law enforcement experience. I've never seen anything quite like this, a mass murder attack where within a very short period of time, you can't figure out why it was done. Here, that's the situation that we're in. What I've pointed out is that, you know, even if this let's assume for the moment that this guy is compos mentis, because we don't know that even. But assuming he can form criminal intent, it probably is terrorism under Nevada law rather than under federal law. You really have to commit terrorism for a purpose. It's basically to coerce a government or a civilian population to adopt whatever line you want adopted. Under Nevada law, which I got a look at for the first time in the aftermath of this shooting, they really concentrate more on the act than the purpose behind the act. So if you have an intention to intimidate a civilian population, that's good enough for terrorism in Nevada, notwithstanding whether it's for a purpose or not.
Yeah. Well, this certainly would qualify for that, it would sound. Andy, very quickly, you were one of these co-signers of an amicus brief before the Supreme Court, for which I'm very grateful. It basically urged the court, when they take up this so-called travel ban of the president's, to countenance the idea that what's needed here, really, is an ideological filter. Would you just talk a little bit about that, and then very quickly, where you think the court's going at the moment on this set of executive orders of the president?
Well, yes, Frank. I think that much more important than the travel ban itself, which is directed at countries, what we need to have is something that allows us to screen out Sharia supremacists from the rest of the Muslim population. I mean, that's really where the threat is. And as I've said before in our prior discussions, while I think it's very important to worry about trained terrorists sneaking into the country with these refugee populations, say, I think the long-term threat to us is the development of enclaves in the United States that become the support system for jihadism like they have been in Europe. So we're more worried, I think, about the, you know, 11, 12, 13-year-old kid today who is 5 years from now a terrorist. And that's really the long-term problem. Where we're at, I think, is a place where the court, the Supreme Court, that is, really doesn't want to deal with this issue and kind of set the table on this so that by the time they return for work this week, the old travel order, which was the litigation we're talking about, was about, would be basically moot. and we'd have a new one. So I think now we're kind of starting again from ground zero on the new guidance that just came out.
A do-over, as they say. Andy, thank you so much. This is really helpful on so many different counts. We appreciate our visits with you. Hope we can do it again very soon. In the meantime, stay well, my friend, and keep up, of course, the terrific work you do at National Review Online and PJ Media, among other places. Next up, we'll speak a little bit more about this Iran deal from and with our colleague Fred Flights, career intelligence professional and expert on Iran and what it's up to with its nuclear program, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.